From the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, never get silly around here.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Well, good morning. It is the real world of money. That's what we do every Wednesday. The star of the show is Andrew Goss. He's in up there near the Hoboken Film Festival in Hawthorne, New Jersey. And he's just working to pay his property taxes. So we have him on the show. It's great. Okay, we have him on the show once a week. And he has two books, Secret World of Money, Uncle Sam Cooks the Books, and a new one working on it. Andrew Goss, good morning. And do you guys have the highest property taxes in the nation?
Yeah,
in the nation, you guys are leading. That's good.
That is the case. We're number one.
Well, good for you.
Yep.
It's nice to be number one in something. And you could get yourself a socialist, liberal governor and make it. They could raise it.
I think we have one. Get your drum and cymbal ready because. Some would argue that the whole state is turning into number two.
Is that right? No.
Never mind number one.
Really? Well, you know, I thought that you guys were more. You're more bluish kind of a Libby.
Oh, we're solid blue now.
Libby area up in there, right? And so you guys like taxes, you know, the Libs.
We love them.
Yeah. Why is it the liberals like taxes or the lefty like taxes?
I don't think it's maybe. Oh,
I don't think it is.
Is it a liberal thing?
I don't know.
I think it's a government thing.
It's a government thing. It's a globalist thing.
Yes.
It's not a liberal
thing.
Give us
your money. You don't know how to spend it. We'll spend it better than you.
You don't know how to spend it, right?
Yeah.
That's what the Zucks and the Bernies and the. Tesla dude in the world, so they're working on this.
I got mine, so give me yours.
They're working on this guaranteed, right? Did you see that?
Universal basic income.
You see that in Finland? In Finland, we talked about it.
Stockton, California.
Well, Finland, a couple years ago, remember, they did a basic income.
Mm-hmm.
There were people were paid for a guaranteed salary, giving non-workers living wage. And I think that was about 550 euros per month,
right?
And something like that. And so they just announced this week, well, never mind. We're not going to do this.
It's not working.
Because people tend to not want to work. Oh, I'm so surprised at that, aren't you?
Mayflower. William Bradford. The Massachusetts experiment. You know, come on. That's 1620. Those that fail to study history are doomed or condemned?
Condemned or something. So in 1620, what went on? 1620?
Oh, we've talked about that before.
That's right.
Mayflower, the Pilgrims landed on Plymouth Rock.
Did they? What, right on the rock? Or
right there
right,
on the rock.
Right there on the rock.
They tied the boat up to the rock.
Uh-huh,
and not really. Of course, you can get the historical account.
Sure.
But essentially, they all went ashore and said, okay, this is the Commonwealth. And we're all going to work towards a common goal. So you
kinda
get
like
up there.
Kind of like a commune?
Yes, a communist. So you get up there and fix the roof. And you get over there and plow the field.
Yeah.
And you get over there and do the wash. And you get over there and do the cooking. And I'm going to sit here on this rock and think. And, you know.
And we're going to all share.
Yeah, and we're all going to share equally in the result. And, you know, since my thinking is so valuable, I might get a bigger share than everybody else because I got to think. That burns up a lot of energy. I need to plan. I need to strategize. And then pretty soon, you know, my buddy's working too hard over there. I'm going to enlist him to help me strategize. I'm going to take somebody else and put them in his job and so forth. And then so the people that were doing the hard work and really producing the things started looking around at those people that were sitting around strategizing and said, doesn't matter. I'm going to eat the same whether I work hard or not.
I work hard or not. So that's the first experiment in universal income kind of thing.
On American soil? Yeah. It wasn't even American yet, but yeah, that was the first experiment of any degree. And then, of course, a year into it, they're starving to death.
Because?
Well, because there were too many people strategizing and not enough people doing the hard work, and no incentive for them to work any harder, none whatsoever.
But you know, Mr. Zuckerberg and Mr. Bernie say that, well, if you just give people enough money, then they'll have time to think, so they can be more creative.
Everybody can sit on the rock. So who's going to then be the productive person in this crowd?
Oh, the government will just take care of that. They have a lot of money.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, didn't work out for the pilgrims too well. Unless they're going to take it from the Native Americans, they didn't have anything. So finally, I think it was year two, William Bradford said, okay, you know, enough of this. Everybody gets their own little piece of land here. Everybody's responsible for themselves. And everybody
like
can
personal responsibility.
Yes. Everybody can rise or fall based on their production.
Mm-hmm. Then what happened then?
What do you mean, what happened? Here we sit today. Yeah, the United States having the greatest capitalist country in the world happened. People said, oh, okay, I can work for myself. Now, I tell you what, the people that were sitting on the rock strategizing, they couldn't very well eat. They couldn't. I mean, there was no productivity measured from their sitting on the rock and thinking. And so they, of course, were quite upset at the turn of events. Tried to urge everyone that we should go back to that, but
the commune.
The commune.
Commune. Yeah.
Because as Abraham Lincoln defined it, and I love this definition, you work and I'll eat. That was his definition.
Well, you know, just in case you're having a problem with President Trump and his tweeting and stuff.
Oh, yes.
Just think about it. I mean, 2020 is not far away.
Yeah.
And Bernie Sanders, Bernie is going to come to the rescue. Bernie is going to...
Is he now?
Oh, he is going to... There's Bernie. There's Bernie.
Yeah.
Hi, Bern. Looking pretty good. He's got that silver hair in the wind, you know, just coming in. Bernie says that what we should...
It looks really good when he's driving his Audi with the top down, you know.
Oh, yeah, I like it. We should American workers who want or need jobs should have a guaranteed government job that pays at least $15 an hour and have all the benefits.
Yeah.
That's what he says.
It doesn't matter if they're any good at it or not.
Well, he doesn't say that.
Matter of fact, they don't even have to be good at it.
He doesn't say
that. They just have to show up.
He just says, we're just going to do this because this is... And I'll be president, and I'll do this for you. We're going to eliminate poverty.
Oh, elect me president, and I'll give you $15 an hour.
That's right. That's right.
Elect me president, and I'll give you free college. Mm-hmm. Elect me president, and I'll give you. Yeah, they've tried that. That's the problem with democracy.
But hey,
once the people realize they can vote for themselves, they can vote for things for themselves.
Well, Derek Hamilton, he's a big economist there, the New School of Economy in the New School of Economy.
Yeah, the New School. Yeah.
He says this is an opportunity for something transformative beyond the thinking we've done in the past 40 years, where all productivity gains have gone to the elite society.
Oh, that's where they've gone.
See, all the people who work are just the elite.
So the 1,000 new millionaires created every day, where do they come from?
I don't know about them.
Oh.
I don't know about them.
They don't get their share?
I think they work at Starbucks or something.
Maybe. They probably have these $15 an hour government jobs, and they just work a lot of hours.
However, critics of this plan, and there are many.
Like me.
suggest that a 15-hour per hour minimum wage triggers job losses, never mind if you just give it to them, even if people walk.
Yeah.
It work, you know.
You get a robot. You see the new robot that picks vegetables? Oh, that one's good.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Oh, yeah. Hey, Eli Whitney, he did his robot.
The cotton gin.
Revolutionized the industry. Mm-hmm. Eliminated. Had, and in fact, the cost, forgive me for saying this word.
Go ahead.
The cost to maintain slaves was more expensive than if you just bought one of these newfangled contraptions here, these cotton gins.
Really?
Yes.
Just buy a cotton gin,
free all your slaves.
Let the slaves go. Well,
you don't need to feed them. you know, the cotton gin just like does it and doesn't complain and
good for
you. Don't have to have a whipmaster and all that.
How'd that go for Eli? Did he have a patent and everything? Did he have an app for it?
Yeah, the point is that the cotton gin would have done away with this sooner or later, and the mechanized farm and mechanization. So now we're having the same thing. Slaves are going to be freed in the 21st century. By automation, robotics. You walk into your local McDonald's. We talked about them a couple of shows ago, where you just order your stuff on the kiosk there. That's one employee out the door. And then, of course, Mickey D's working on these burger flipping machines and these automatic French fries. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you imagine a day like the old automat? Now, the automat in New York in the 1950s, you walked in, you looked in the little glass door, you saw the thing you liked, you put your quarters in, and you opened the door and you pulled the thing out. And then someone behind there that you never saw would fill that thing back up. But in the Star Trek and space movies that we watch where, you know, we push a button and boom, out comes a hot latte, you know, that sort of thing is the sort of development that is leading the robotics world to replace human interaction. And, of course, the folks and the techie guys and the lefties are saying, oh, well, that's going to eliminate the need for people altogether. So we won't even need a workforce.
And then you can just have baby robots and make baby robots. You won't even need... So then, but then you, as a capitalist and more personal responsibility dude, nationalist.
Oh, yeah.
Did I say that?
No, white nationalist,
oh, you're
just
a white
for the record.
Nationalist, too.
I should get my DNA test.
That's the worst. So what you're saying is then the younger folk are going to just need to do something that people want because...
That's right.
Because the machines will be flipping the burgers, and they can't do that. Is that what you're saying?
Right.
Okay.
So maybe they'll do.
But then you're
the
one of the elite
flipping.
White guys that just want to kill people.
That's right.
You know.
Oh yeah, yeah. Don't want to see people succeed.
Drown baby cats. And all
that sort of thing. Kick puppies.
Misogynist. Yeah, you probably like girls too. Yeah. So I know, it's tough. Yeah. So you're okay with that? Yeah. Telling the kids, well, listen, you just got to do something that
be
people
smarter,
want.
For goodness sake. Work smarter. No one owes you anything. Get out there and get it. It's on your own. That's it. Tell the kids. There's no.
And what'd
you know,
your,
this is the wilderness.
What'd your kids
to the baby
say?
Rabbit.
What did your kids say when you told them that?
Okay, Dad.
I
need a safe place. Where's the safe place?
I'm going to leave.
I think the cavemen were looking for a safe place, too, when they found the cave and hence their name. There is no safe place for any of God's creatures on this earth. Well, wait a minute. I think that was incorrect, too. Did I say God's creatures?
Yeah, you got to be careful. Because then you could start saying that God is a man, and then you'd have...
We're off on another
tangent
altogether.
Then you have to call it there. They have to call it a they.
So the idea that that you're entitled to some sort of safety from everything, you know, it's...
Just not the way the world works.
No, it's not how it works, and you're not going to make it work that way by wishing.
So you weren't a great supporter, then, of...
Helmet laws? No.
No, not helmet
laws. Seatbelt laws? No.
Okay, hold on a second.
You know, not a great supporter.
You weren't a great supporter of kids going out and not going to school because they were demonstrating and they wanted the government to do something.
If they were getting paid, I couldn't object. You know, okay. Why are you out here demonstrating?
Well, they
I'm
want the
paid.
Government to do something because they don't feel safe at school. Don't
well,
you?
Well, I'm
get
getting
it?
Paid.
Don't you
okay,
get it?
Then
don't
I'll
you get
just it? Stop. I'll hop right over you. Why are you out here? Oh, because I get a day off school. I don't have to study. I don't have to work. And the bus brought us here. All right, I'll skip over you. I got to look hard in that crowd for someone who's appalled by the number of gun deaths. Do you have that statistic, Patrick?
Which one?
How many gun deaths there are in the United States in any given year?
I can ask Dr. Google while you're talking.
Well, you know, because never mind whether you're at school, young, at a Waffle House, old, it doesn't matter. You might get shot. That's just the way it is. Maybe you live in Syria. You might get shot. It's just the way it is. You might also get run over by a car or a truck. 17 people dead in Toronto, I think, was it?
Yeah.
10, 12, 15, I don't know. Some guy drove a truck. Oh, haven't we had enough? Shouldn't we ban trucks? I mean, we could all walk where we need to go. We could take public transport.
Well, they do that in Austin. They do it in Austin.
Well, you see how ridiculous it gets. And I don't see him again marching. 115 opioid deaths a day, according to the CDC, every single day. Where are the marchers? How come they're not out walking around talking about take a day off school to protest this? Well,
okay, in 2017, 15,549 people were killed by guns in the United States.
A year?
Excluding suicides.
A year?
A year.
A year?
That's right.
Oh, goodness.
That's what it says.
Yeah, I think we should stop worrying about that. Let's focus that attention on the opioid crisis because, did I say it? Let me say it again. What was that? 115 people a day, according to the CDC.
115 times 365?
Yeah.
Whoops, that's 50 grand.
Yeah, it's a, well, that's a 50, lot more than people. Die from gun violence, that's for sure.
Is it really 115 people a day from opioids?
Yeah.
Oh.
CDC new figure out yesterday.
Uh-huh.
I also caught something else yesterday. Did you see the China citizen credit?
I beg your pardon?
Oh, goodness.
Google.
China has developed this facial recognition, gait recognition, and walking. That's facial, gait, and voice recognition that allows them to analyze an individual at rapid speed from the computer. So there's complete artificial intelligence. So the computer scans the person, the way they walk, their facial features, and their voice if they can get it, and they identify them, boom, they link them to the database. Okay, so that's the fun part. Here comes the real creepy part.
Creepy.
Cops are wearing these things now, the glasses.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That allow them, as soon as they look at a person, they can tell wants, warrants, outstanding, and so forth.
Really? That's like...
Yeah, well, they don't know. The computer tells them, oh, be careful, this is a bad guy.
That's like Minority Report.
Well, it gets worse.
Oh, really?
Now they're going to start doing the citizens' credit report in Beijing. So essentially, oh, look, he jaywalked. Okay, so we make a mark in his file. He jaywalked.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that. He just threw that wrapper down on the ground. Nobody writes you a ticket. They just make a mark in your file.
Well, you just get a mark in your file.
You get a mark in your file.
Like a demerit.
Like a demerit. Like, and then your citizen's behavioral credit rating carries, moves along. Oh, there he goes, speeding. Look, he's speeding.
Oh, that guy.
Oh, that guy. Look at him. And so each time you do these things, you get a mark. And then, you know, the worse you are, the lower your credit rating. The better you are, the better a citizen you are.
Oh, a better citizen.
Oh, yeah.
I want to be one of those.
Well, you should, because then you get, you know, subsidies on apartments. Your behavior is rewarded.
And this is really spooky where you're going with all this.
I'm not going anywhere. This is happening right now in China.
Come on. It's not.
Beijing.
No kidding.
Today. This is not the future. No. This is now.
And what do they call this? This whole program?
I don't know what they call it. I don't speak Chinese. I just know the...
It's all Greek to me, man.
Yeah, right. I do know that it is the best way to liken it for an American is with your credit rating. You know, you don't pay your bill 1 month. Oh, sure. Mark on your credit rating.
Oops.
Are you gone over your limit? Oops. Mark against your credit rating. How does it matter? Well, okay, now I want to go lease a car. Ooh, credit rating. See? So in China, where they are...
They're communing with each other.
A citizen's, comrade rating is probably very important, or will be, because the government decides who to hand out its largesse to and who not to. And so having a good sterling citizen rating, comrade rating, that's probably what they'll call it.
According to the CDC, in 2015, now this is 3 years old, there were 53,000 drug overdose deaths in the United States. I was kind of looking for the number of prescription drugs, but this is...
Yeah, opioids.
Yeah, these are opioids, 50 grand.
Yeah.
But then there's also just prescription drug, never mind the opioids.
Prescription drugs in general.
Yeah, just, just...
The ones that you get from the...
You pour down your statin
coat
when you come home drunk or something like that. You just take a whole bottle of statins, you know. Statins. It's huge number. I don't know if you've heard. It's weird. Well, this is, I don't know. I'll find the number, but it's a lot of people. It's just the stuff that they...
Yeah.
You can go to Walgreens way more and get legally, you know what I mean?
Way more than gun deaths.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
Whew. Well, I wonder who's behind this, all these kids, taking a day off of school. And any idea?
Well, I was in Beaufort, South Carolina, right?
You were. Well, good is, for you.
The county is Beaufort County. Uh-huh. Hilton Head was the... one kid did decide to walk out of class and protest on the National Day of Protest. I think it was March 14th, whatever it was. And that person was suspended from school. So I suppose I have no qualms with an individual student getting up on their own and taking an action for which they accept the consequences, as this young person did.
Okay,
I'm okay with that, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to get up and walk out of class. Mm-hmm. I fully expect what you're going to do to me. I'm ready. I'm ready to get whacked in the head and go in that paddy wagon to protest the Vietnam War.
Because I believe that.
And that's right, because it's a strongly held principle. And so how many people crossed that line during the Vietnam War? Numbers were legion. Mm-hmm. It's what finally got the government to understand. But a school-sanctioned event where busing is provided. I mean, come on now. Oh, line up for the protest. I find it offensive, quite frankly. I just find it offensive.
It doesn't seem right to me.
No, it's just that. You know, what good is a protest when it's organized by the administration? Mm-hmm. You know? Come on. Yeah. Or when they allow it. Heck, they wouldn't even allow senior skip day when I was a kid. So
yeah, I understand. I hear where you're coming from. Andrew Goss, Patrick Tempone. It is the real world of money. I've got so many tabs open. My computer is just kind of throwing up. And so we have a lot to talk about here. And as you can tell, we go a lot of different places. If you'd like to join the show, you're welcome to do that, please. It is Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com as we're live here this morning, April 25. Or you can call, that nobody does anymore, but there's still a thing called a telephone. We don't do text, but you can call 888-663-6386. And if you'd like to have an idea about some things you can do for your Wi-Fi in your bedroom, which we don't recommend, or your cell phone towers around, check this out. Previously, we were talking with Brandon about the Blue Shield EMF device, and he says it goes out 90 yards in all directions.
It's an omnidirectional field that, if you think about a huge sphere that's expanding, that's essentially what the waveform pattern looks like.
Oh, that's cool. So it's putting frequencies into the body, and then how does that work in relation to electromagnetic field that's coming in the walls and the windows through a cell phone tower down the street?
Yeah, so the cell repeaters and Wi-Fi and all this electromagnetic radiation in the environment, people mistakenly think that this is somehow going to act like a shield and block the radiation and make it not appear on any kind of tri-field meter or any measuring device. And that's simply not the case. It's more of an energy medicine, so to speak, where it's stimulating the bodies at the cellular level to create a cellular response to make all the individual cells much stronger and more able to adapt to the EMF stressors. So that's number one on the physical or the somatic level, where the body is experiencing a decrease in stress from electromagnetic fields.
If you're interested, you can click on the Blue Shield ad on the front page of One Radio Network. Use promo code One Radio, or also contact Brandon through his website there when you click, and he'll give you more information. Front page, Blue Shield EMF protection device on OneRadioNetwork.com. And with each passing day, week, and month, we're getting a better idea, just beginning to better understand how these guys, whether it be, as I said, cell phone towers, Wi-Fis, all the stuff we're surrounded with, and now 5G coming to a neighborhood new year, affect the cells. And the lady, Dr. Banks, who was on the show Monday, was talking about, and she's a Harvard lady and knows a lot about this kind of stuff. And she went straight after being an OBGYN for about 25 years and now in Guadalajara, trying to help people to understand what's really going on. She said it's the energy in the cells that actually lose energy. And that does this by chemicals, electromagnetic fields, processed foods, stress, and stuff like that. And the cells just lose energy. And definitely EMFs are part of this. So, you know, it's something that you might want to invest in. We think this Blue Shield thing is really cool. It's a beautiful setup developed in Australia about 25 years ago. And probably just a couple kids with glasses in their garage one day, and now look what they're doing. Just kidding about that. Anyway, and you can just click on the front page, BlueShieldOneRadioNetwork.com. Daniel Vitalis, this idea of colostrum being really good for the immune system, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the thing about colostrum is that it is developed in the blood of the cow right before it calves, and it's developed so that it can format the immune system of its calf. It's pretty important to understand that a calf would have no immune system if it got no colostrum. So it's pretty well understood that if you deprive a calf of colostrum, it's going to have a failure to thrive. It might even die. Now, human beings are a little bit different. We can survive without our mother's colostrum, but we never are going to have a fully intact immune system. The important thing to remember is that we're living in an era where there's more people alive today with dysfunctional immune systems than ever before. And colostrum gives us the ability to actually restructure, rebuild, and reformat our immune systems so we can really thrive in our modern world today.
Explore, research, and order all of Daniel Vitalis' products clicking on the Survival links on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com.
Broadcasting live, weekday mornings, this is listener-supported One Radio Network.
With Andrew Goss, he's a currency historian. He also is a dad and grandpa and stuff like that. And you are, right, dad, grandpa, right, Andrew? You're
Eight times over.
Yeah. Eight times over a grandfather?
Yes.
Wow, yeah. Really? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Your latest baby was named Andrew...
Jackson Goss.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. You don't think he's going to grow up to be a wild one, huh?
A boy named like Sue. Another boy named Sue story.
A boy named Sue. Andrew, he also sells he buys and sells gold coins for a living. He's a numismatist, right? You're a numismatist. Say it again.
Numismatist.
That's a great thing. So you actually have gold and silver coins of historical and collector value.
I seek them out.
You seek them out. You don't sell like I can't get a Cougaran from you. Can I call you up and say, I want a Cougaran, I want one of
those?
Call your
bullion dealer. Okay. Yeah. No, if you want a coin like, though...
You don't do bullion.
If you have an old coin, or you want an old coin, I'm your guy. New England guy. I'm a guy from New England. Goes poking around in his inherited property and finds an 1854 S$5. So he says, oh, well, let me send that to NGC. And so he sends it to NGC. And they certify it. And now he's got a coin worth, I don't know, $5 million or so?
No.
Yeah, we'll see.
Did he even know he had this thing all these years? Or?
What do you think? I mean, he's an older gentleman.
And he finds an 1854 $5 thing, calls you?
No, he doesn't call me. I wish he would have. No.
Oh, this is just a story.
So, you know, before you... Yeah, this is new numismatic news. And if you have a coin and you think it's a super rare coin, or you think it's a rare coin, and you want to have it authenticated so that the rest of the world knows that it's real. See, that's the whole point of the grading. We've had that discussion about the grading. They're separate and distinct from any coin dealer. Their whole function is to grade and certify coins. That's it. So it's real, it's not real, it's a 60, it's a 50, it's a 45, whatever it is. This coin happened to be a 45 on a scale of 1 to 70, and NGC graded it as the discovery of a lifetime.
Only a half the purity or rarity, or not purity, but condition. Half the condition that you can get, 70, 45.
Yeah, 70 is a perfect coin. So this coin's a 45, obviously worn, used as money, probably thrown in a desk drawer somewhere 100 years ago and forgotten about. Well, as time has gone on, numismatists like myself have gone through the mint records and identified how many coins were made of each type and published that information, and then went to look for more information. And so each year that goes by, more and more information about America's rare coins comes to the surface. And one of the things discovered about this 1854S is that there were just 268 made. in 1854 at the San Francisco Mint. This is, you know, Gold Rush era. And how many were used? I think all 268 came out of the mint to hungry hands that quickly took them and put them in circulation. And who knows? Most of them were worn down. I know there's one in the Smithsonian. There is one in the Smithsonian.
Why on earth would anyone pull out 5 million pieces of paper with pictures of dead presidents on them and exchange them for an 1854 coin? I mean, why would anybody pay $5 million for a coin like that?
It doesn't even make sense. Well, this becomes the fifth surviving specimen, I believe. So this is now one of five. Maybe another one will come up. Mm-hmm. But people have a general desire to own what other people cannot own. Yeah.
Okay.
So the Pogue family of Texas, for example, a rather wealthy family in Texas, has a coin collection known throughout the country, throughout the numismatic industry, shall I say. They have a 54S. And let's see, the DuPont family had one. And in fact, the Willis's DuPont had a had one of these examples in his collection. And I think we talked about last week this new Utah billionaire that has decided he wants to, right? He needs it. So if that's who's going to pay $5 million, he's got to have it. I mean, really. The one in the Smithsonian, one is already with a wealthy family in Texas. He's not going to pry that away with money. The DuPonts, what are the odds that he's going to say, here's $5 million, DuPonts will go, like, get out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we don't want to sell it. No, not interested. So after, you know, the dust settles, do you think this gentleman would be anxious to have this 54S $5 if he is, in fact, trying to do what he says, which is buy every single coin in the Red Book? Well, yeah, he's got to have it. He has to have it. So a billionaire, $5 million, what is that?
Nothing? Nothing. Chump change, man.
Well, Trump change.
Trump
because, you know, they argue Trump's not a billionaire. He's broke.
Andrew Gospatrick, Tim Bonet, it's the real world of money. We have come to kind of get a good idea over the years, Andrew Goss, that we kind of know the causes of cancer. It's not even a conjecture anymore. We just kind of know, right? We just know. We know the problems. So, but then the chances of the military or the medical industrial complex ever saying, yeah, that's it. Why don't we just don't do this, and you won't get cancer? That's not going to happen because it's a great deal of money. My question to you on this April 25th day is, when did this start? This idea of huge amount of corporate government conflagulation together to do whatever they wanted to do and not listen to anything else.
That would have been I guess the real first instance would have been the American destroyer Franklin Delano Roosevelt. You know, the idea that we're going to assemble this cabinet and these people are going to make the country better, regardless of what you thought they could or couldn't do.
FDR.
Bernard Baruch.
No.
Yeah. One of his
dollar
a year men.
So what do you mean by make the country better? We're just going to figure out what you guys need
we're going to order the people to make it. So we're going to go into the factories. I think it was called the War Industries Board, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Mm.
So that was the first time that this all started.
Well, you know, in every time of war, really. You know, if you go back to the Revolution, they were. Did I say World War II? I did, didn't I?
I don't know.
No. FDR. War Industries Board was World War I because that was Bernard Baruch. Woodrow Wilson would have to take credit for that.
And I guess one of the biggest things that are affecting us today, most people, is the Rockefeller thing in the early 1900s with the American model of medicine that we know today, right? Which is surgery, drugs, and long hospital stays. That's the model, right? That's
murder by injection by the late Eustace Mullins.
So that's a huge one, right?
Oh,
somebody kicked off with a lot of money.
Yeah.
And The real historians will tell you, man, this thing was just a rigged deal from the very beginning.
Yeah.
That they came up with this molecular biology theory, right? This reductionist theory, and they've been selling it ever since. And
yes.
And it's like,
it's but
like,
it's science, Patrick.
Oh, well,
it's
this
science.
Is their science, and it's like a religion, right? And you're not.
Is
gonna,
it science or is it theory?
Is it? Well, I mean, whatever.
Is theory science?
Is theory, well, to the, yeah, I mean, if you get
to
enough,
them, it is, yeah.
If you get enough
they
guys
postulate
in white coats,
a theory.
Yeah, that's
yeah
right.
Like the dinosaurs rotted at the bottom of this pile. And now they're turning into oil.
Hmm.
Yeah. Remember Sinclair Petroleum? Their symbol was the dinosaur. You know, that's where oil comes from.
Yeah.
It's decaying dinosaurs
dinosaur
and plant
poop,
life
really,
at the bottom
it?
Of
it.
Yeah. So it's a theory, uh-huh. And they put this theory forward, and then it's accepted as science.
Big Bang, same thing.
That's when I have a problem.
Same thing.
That's when I have a problem. Can you prove it to me? No. Well, it's just a theory. Well, then that's all it is. Don't call it science, because it ain't.
And the whole vaccine is the same way. We've had so many smart people's on there. No, it's just not. It's
so where did that come from?
Salk and that whole polio thing. And, No?
No, it came from the ships of the British Navy.
The ships of the British Navy? Oh, good. The Queen's always involved.
No, the Queen was on shore. Uh-huh. But meanwhile, there's a boat full of sailors. Uh-huh. And, you know, smallpox is running wild. What are they going to do, jump in the water?
Hmm.
One smart sailor took a needle and a canvas thread and ran it through the pustule of a smallpox victim.
Oh,
and
you
then,
mean that? That
and
thing,
then
yeah.
Sewed it through his own skin. And, you know, a little disease got in there and triggered the body's immune system to give him an immunity to those are the first vaccines.
I think that whole model is wrong, too. I think I think it's all made up. Yeah,
I'm sure I don't know.
I do, you know.
I'm sure of that.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm sure of that.
This lady on Monday, a Harvard gal who's been working on this thing for her whole life, Dr.
Mm-hmm,
Banks,
mm-hmm.
said these viruses like HIV, they don't even exist. They have never isolated them. They don't exist. It's just the whole thing is made up.
No kidding.
Made up.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. You just, you know, it's...
I have a hard enough time keeping up with the 54S, $5.
No, I understand.
Pieces,
I understand.
So.
That's my job.
I
but
leave
anyway.
It to you. That's you.
Viruses,
exactly.
They're just
you
made.
Tell me, Patrick.
Like these flu viruses and all this. They don't really, I mean, they're everywhere. We have them out right now. And they're all the body's inability to deal with this. Do you know that the root canal thing that my dentist, when he did a test.
Stuart
Nunley, he did a peer-reviewed test or study. And they were really picky. He gave them like 100 different root canals to study, and they only let them use these 25.
Use these worst 25.
Yeah, they use the worst 25. Well, these things they came up with, they found things like leprosy and gonorrhea and all these things in these things. Now, where did this stuff come from? These,
right.
These are all, they're all in one big blob of viruses. They're everywhere, you know. I mean, they're not even viruses. These are just names they gave to these things, right?
Yeah.
So they could try to get rid of them. It was a Hegelian dialectic. Oh, polio was the same way, you know. Mm. It was just a big, the whole
Help
thing.
Us.
The, yeah,
Help
the big scam. Oh, well, don't get me started. Okay,
don't
it is
get me
April
started.
25th. I'm like you with coins and
yeah,
this
exactly.
kind of stuff.
Exactly, don't
like,
get me started.
It just blows my circuits when I think about what's going on. Okay, so here's what I have on my notes here that I thought you might help us with.
Okay.
The big news out there, of course, is President Trump and tariffs and the globalists are running around with their hair on fire and the world's going to come to an end. We're going to go to war. And, you know, every time he tweets China is going to be okay, then the stock market goes up. And then China says, no, we don't. Not so much. The stock market goes down. So it's a big deal. So I've been trying to figure out how this affects the dollar and how this is all involved. And I came across a pretty cool story that started talking about that this whole thing started in 1944, right?
Mm-hmm.
With Bretton Woods.
Yes.
Right? Where, if I understand, and you can maybe talk to us like we're a young child or a golden retriever, so we understand the essence of this whole trade thing and deficits, trade deficits, and the dollar reserve currency, because it's all together, right? If I understand,
it's all
intermingled. What's your word? Inextricably tied.
Inextricably.
I love that word. Okay.
Yeah.
So, So the idea was that if we had more trade deficits, then the people could that had more dollars, they could trade those for gold, correct, at the very beginning?
Yeah, right? Gold was the standard.
The gold was the standard. So they were okay with taking our dollars.
What do you mean, before Bretton Woods?
No, after Bretton Woods.
Yeah, after Bretton Woods, the idea was the dollar or its equivalent.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And then in 1961, I read, the London Gold
Pool
they said gold is $35 an ounce.
Yeah, well, actually, that had been set by FDR.
In what year?
Oh, goodness. So when he, the story of how FDR decided what the price of gold was going to be is, it's remarkable. When he recalled gold, the price of gold was $20 an ounce, 1/20th of an ounce of gold.
33, right?
Correct. Then every day he would sit in his, that's like the first thing he did in the morning. I'm good. What's the price of gold going to be today? Do you believe this? And the president would say $20.85. And that was the price of gold.
Right.
And he just slowly crept it up until it got to $35 an ounce, but he didn't just go right there. So by the time he picked $35 an ounce, it became kind of the standard.
The standard.
Yeah, throughout the world. So the London Gold Pool
kind of just confirmed that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Started there.
So the idea being then the $35 an ounce in 1960, if the trade deficit, meaning we had bought more stuff than
we could pay for,
that we sold, right?
That's right.
Trade deficit.
That is,
it was okay because that was fostering the idea of the dollar being a reserve currency. Continue that whole Bretton Woods thing, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Except Charles de Gaulle didn't believe it.
It's always something with you, I know.
Yeah. Okay. He was one of them.
Yeah. Okay. But he was returning his dollars for gold.
Yeah, he said, I'm not holding on to these dollars. Right, right. I don't believe you that you've only printed $35 for every ounce of gold you have. So here, I'm just going to give you these dollars and you give me gold.
So this worked out okay for a while and everybody was kind of happy. And the United States was okay having trade deficits.
Yeah, and they just went, oh, pshaw, we have so much gold here. You want gold? Come and take it. Mm. That was sort of, the bluff.
They didn't care about trade deficit like the president does because they were really just worried about having the dollar remain as a reserve currency, correct?
Back then?
Yeah, back then.
No.
No?
No, they weren't worried about the dollar
remaining. But no, wasn't that what Bretton Woods was about?
Bretton Woods set the gold or its equivalent.
Right. No, I know. I guess.
The marketplace decided that the dollar was gold's equivalent. So, I mean, that's what...
Yeah, but you could still always exchange your dollars for gold for a while.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you were an international person, not an American, from 1933 right up until Bretton Woods, when it was illegal for Americans to own gold.
So then President Nixon closed the gold window and they couldn't exchange anymore after de Gaulle was bringing the dollars over in his shiploads, right?
Well, yeah, de Gaulle started that in 60s, right, under Kennedy's watch, and Kennedy's interaction with the London Gold Pool. I have some great writings on that. In fact, there are, you know, if you really want to study that time, who was thinking what, it's well documented, the activities of the London Gold Pool vis-a-vis the United States.
Okay, so in the 70s when President Nixon took the dollar off the gold window, then that's when inflation started.
Well, inflation, I would argue, had started long before. So prior to Nixon making it official.
But not on the charts.
Yes, on the charts. It had started before.
But if you look at the charts, the inflation really started inflating.
Are you measuring the CPI chart again?
Well, I don't know. I just
idea of the result of inflation. But what I mean by inflation is an excess production of money in excess of production. So the idea that the American government had issued more than $35 for every ounce that it could back, right? That's true inflation. See, when the government or when the issuing authority exceeds its ability to redeem its note with gold, That's what causes inflation.
All right, but after the gold window thing was done,
71, right?
71, then that's when we had Jimmy Carter running around the White House saying, whip inflation now and all that
stuff.
Oh,
okay. Right? I got what you're, okay. The point
then,
you're making.
Then I was all
inflation
going,
was revealed. After
revealed, yes. And then that's when Paul Volcker tried to stop it, and he started raising interest rates and went to 20%, right?
Correct.
So if I understand trade deficits in general, mm-hmm. they artificially keep the dollar stronger, correct? Is that true?
No.
No. Well, no. Sure they would, because if we have a $800 million,
you're assuming that everybody who receives a dollar is forced to hold it. The trade deficit can have the opposite effect. If the people that are receiving these excess dollars decide they don't want them anymore, and they dump them into the marketplace, we have no ability to redeem them. It's not like we can say, here's your gold or here's your other thing. They necessarily will cause the value of the dollar to fall, to plummet. The thing that keeps the dollar strong is the demand from the rest of the world for dollar instruments.
But if we're paying dollars for $800 billion more than what we are buying.
Correct.
Right?
And then the country gets the $800 billion. If they just hold it, then that keeps the dollar strong.
Well, but they invest. They also buy treasury bonds. They do all kinds of things.
That's holding it. Buying a treasury bond is holding it.
Right.
It's only when they say.
That's what keeps the dollar strong.
Correct.
Okay.
But if they say, well, I don't want these treasury bonds. I don't want bills or notes. I don't want dollar individual notes. I want a building. I want some coconuts. When they
which
trade
is what's
their,
going on now.
Correct.
Okay, which is what.
When they trade those dollars for assets, right, that are in the, that's when the inflation is revealed. And so that has the opposite effect on the dollar. That makes it weaker. So true that. When people hold dollars, treasury bonds, bills, and notes, then they provide strength to the dollar. When people play hot potato with a dollar and say, ooh, I don't want it, then the value of it plummets based on this excess supply.
So the number that president uses is about $800 billion.
That's what it is.
So what if he succeeds in getting this number down to, say, $200 billion?
How about to no $100 billion? Okay. How about a trade surplus?
Okay. So yeah, well, let's just say an even deal.
Yeah.
What happens to the dollar and to inflation in the United States if that would happen, if the $800 billion trade deficit is wiped?
Well, assuming
what
that
happens
the
then?
Inflation.
Yeah. Because
assuming that the $800 billion
wait,
has to be,
because
yeah, it's offset. I'm telling you, assuming that the $800 billion
yeah.
is offset by productivity, necessarily we would have to increase our exports or stop using the goods and services.
That's not going to happen.
That we import, which is very unlikely. What's more likely is America becomes production again. You know, excess production. We produce more than we need, instead of producing less than we need.
And then what happened? Let's see. But what happened to the $800 billion that we're not spending over there anymore? What happens to those?
We're spending it here.
We're spending
it
here. Okay.
Yeah.
So the dollar.
Suddenly you see hyperactivity in the U.S. economy. Monetary velocity increases.
Mm-hmm.
And that's obviously the turnover in dollars, which is at a low point right now. So monetary velocity increases, individual savings increase, investment in American things increase, and productivity on the American scale increase. So jobs.
That's all good.
That's all good.
But then there's hard. People are having a hard time in some cases even finding folks to work now. I mean, unemployment.
Well,
is
a, there we go.
Well,
that's
just open up those borders, man.
Yes. Well, that's
just
been
kidding.
The case. No, but that's been the case before. Hmm. That was the attitude, you know, open borders, let them come in and work. And then we keep our wages low. You cut the demand for American products by allowing people to produce their goods overseas without any regulation. Then you allow them to import them back in the United States without any tariff. So they've bypassed all the regulations that American companies face, such as worker safety, worker pay, safe environment, environmentally sensitive workplace, all the things that they ignore in China and save a bunch of money by ignoring them. Those are a burden on American companies. So therefore, we make up the difference by importing the goods from other countries. Mm-hmm. We relax regulatory framework. I can't find anybody willing to do that, even the most diehard Republicans.
So why do the globalists hate this whole thing?
Why do they hate this whole
thing? Why do they hate this whole idea, what we just talked about?
Well, because
they want to get the president out.
It kind of throws a wrench in their whole globalist plan.
Which is?
Well, you let me just back up two decades and say this word. The New World Order. We all knew what the hell they were talking about then. They were talking about a centralized world government that handles all defense and all economic matters and cross-border disputes. So that'd be the end to war. What was this concept originally? Oh, it was the League of Nations proposed by Woodrow Wilson. The idea that, oh, you know, the reason we fight all these wars is because we have differences and we have nowhere to settle them except on the battlefield. Mm-hmm. So let's just have this world organization that is the world government. They're in charge of everything. So we have the same rules across all borders. And that'll eliminate, you think of all the things, well, human rights violations. Oh, goodness. Chinese, I love this. My wife brought this to my attention. There was a Chinese work ad that said, you know, only men need apply.
Oh.
Only men.
Get thrown in jail for that.
Well, that became a human rights violation at the UN. So now the UN says, oh, goodness, they're violating human rights. Why? Well, they won't let women be welders or whatever the job was. I didn't even ask. So the point is that there would be a world body that is in charge of setting all of these regulations so that they would be the same throughout the world. And then, and I'm not telling you anything new here. Mm-hmm. The idea that we're heading towards a one world government, for me, it was a one world monetary system where we didn't have all these cross-border, the dollar's worth more than the yen, and there's trade deficits, and none of that matters. In a world where a centralized monetary authority issues a centralized monetary unit, John Maynard Keynes suggested it would be the Bancor, the B-A-N-C-O-R.
B-A-N-C-O-R, yeah.
And that would be the single unit that's good throughout the entire world, didn't matter where you were. You didn't have to change your currency into Bancor. Your currency was Bancor. And you didn't have to maintain an army because there was a blue-helmeted UN army that would come in and take care of any problem.
Well, good for John.
So that's the goal of the globalists, greater world control over events by world legislative authority.
So that's where this whole Codex Alimentarius.
Uh-huh. And hey, UN. Right in your ballywick, right?
Yeah, UN and all that stuff.
So what is this Codex thing? Tell me about it. Tell me what it does.
It's
a worldwide standard.
They want a
right?
worldwide standard for mm-hmm. what would be a safe dose, for example, of vitamin C.
Okay.
So if you only need...
Sounds harmless to me. What's the problem?
Well, because they say you really only need 100 milligrams of vitamin C when you could probably do 5,000 milligrams.
Until you poop, right, Patrick?
Until you poop, right? So the UN, you know, Codex says, no, that's too dangerous because we want to protect you. So we want a national, international, worldwide authority that's going to regulate all this stuff.
I see. Now, you just take the right. word, what do you call that, a worldwide regulatory authority that regulates medicine? Would we say it that?
That'd be like the AMA.
Yeah. So you take that word medicine
yeah.
and insert every other word in its place. A worldwide authority that
regulates global warming that regulates plastic, right?
Everything.
Vaccines,
everything.
Everything. So what you're painting a picture of is that these people are just kind of really spooky, whoever they are, because they're not really about money. They can print all the money
control.
They want.
Yeah.
They're control freaks.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they just want to make it simpler. Let's just do one dude, mm-hmm. you know, like in the movie with Natalie Portman. What's that one? The great movie. You know which one I mean? What is the name of that one? Oh, well, it'll come. Somebody will email. Mm-hmm. So that's their vision.
That is people. Their vision, yeah. Mm-hmm. A peaceful world where all decisions and all authority rests with a single body.
Oh, I feel so.
A governing body.
Better.
The land for which
don't
was
donated.
Don't you
get warm and fuzzy when you hear that?
Nelson Rockefeller.
What'd you say about Rockefeller?
Yeah, well, he donated the land for the UN. You know, he bought
he
that
did.
Whole swath of
that was nice
that's
of
worth
him.
Millions of dollars.
That
he
was
just
nice
gave
of
it
him.
To the UN and said, here, put your headquarters and your building right here.
Really glad about that.
Well, a lot of people are. Yeah, it's a very helpful authority. in the view of those that really believe in it. Mm-hmm. You know, they think that if there is a world government that handles all, you know, you're a global citizen.
You've got a good global citizen.
Rules and rights.
Right.
You got rules and rights and obligations that are the same no matter where you go on this earth.
Do we get to own a firearm if we're a global citizen?
No, it's kind of an iffy situation.
And
this is the problem, that the Constitution of the United States grants the individual citizen rights that the rest of the world does not have. And so what they need to do is dismantle those rights one by one until they fit in with what the rest of, you know, you can't even talk about the Holocaust in Germany. God forbid,
really?
In Germany, you say, oh, I don't believe 6 million Jews died. I think it was only 5,998,000.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about that publicly. Guess what happens to you?
I don't know.
You go to jail.
Really?
It is illegal. Books are banned in Germany still to this day. Books are banned. I mean, the concept of a book banning in the United States is frightening to many. But
Angela Merkel really needs to go on a gluten-free diet or something.
Hard to blame her. But the reality is that the rights of the other countries of the world are not the same as the rights in the United States. Right to due process. We were talking about that Chinese thing before.
Yeah.
So if that was happening in the United States, your right to due process, equal treatment under the law, as guaranteed to you by the Constitution, would mean you could say, hey, I want to dispute the information in your citizen's file, your comrade file. I want to dispute information item by item, and I want a hearing to do so, and then I want the right to appeal the results of that hearing and then appeal again until I get to the Supreme Court, the final arbiter.
You didn't say comrade file, did you?
I did, because that's what it is in China. And so you're in China, if you get a mark in your comrade file that, you know, demerit, you can't challenge it. And that's it. There's no mechanism for dispute resolution. You're the citizen. They're the government. You lose, period. And so you lose, period. Yeah. You get nothing.
You get nothing.
Yeah. Okay. So how do you bring the American Constitution into a world order where the rights of the American citizen are supreme to every other human being on the planet?
That's a problem.
That is a huge problem. You can either A, guarantee those same rights to everyone else on the planet. I'm all for that. Go ahead. Or B, pare back the rights of the American citizen until they're more in line with the citizens of the world.
It's all there, black and white, clear as crystal. You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
Good day, sir.
Gene, I love you.
Yeah, it's your love him, Gene. Gene, the dancing man. So, no, you're not going black helicopter on us, are you, Andrew? I mean, because
I've been black helicopter for 30 years.
Kind of sounding like,
and you know what's curious?
Kind of sounding like Alex Jones.
Right? Yeah. Well,
hey, there goes one now.
Today, back then, they would deny the existence.
We're down here. Okay.
Back then, they would deny the existence of these things, right? But those of us who saw them with our own eyes.
Well,
because we know FAA regulations. You know FAA regulations enough to know that if an aircraft is flying in the United States airspace, it has to have clearly identifiable tail numbers. Have you ever seen those things? They're the size of, the biggest you could put on the plane.
Really?
And if you're a military aircraft, well, what are you? Are you the Army? You have your Army insignia. Are you the Air Force? You have the Air Force insignia. Are you the Navy? Well, it says USN. Are you the Coast Guard? Hey, it's orange and white, and it's got its Coast Guard markings. What if it's all black with no markings?
I know.
Who does it belong to? We don't know. Could it be the CIA? Yes. Could it be some private corporation? Yes. Could it be anything at all? Because obviously that was the purpose of the tail number. Same with the purpose of a license plate. Imagine if you saw a fleet of black SUVs whipping down the highway. No plates, no inspection stickers, no markings of any kind.
Ooh.
What would you think then?
I'm going to Canada.
Well, okay. So back in the day, in the black helicopter days when we were all, you must be a conspiracy theorist if you believe in these black helicorpters their existence was slowly revealed to the American public, along with the black hooded ninja warriors that came out of the things. You know, that's real. It's not imagined. But back in the 80s, yes, of course, if you believed in the black helicopters, then that meant, well, everything else you said is garbage.
It's really interesting about you said it's all out in the open now. They don't even hide it anymore.
That's right. That's
There's
right.
another big investigation out this morning. OPCW investigates, found no evidence, in quotes, chemical weapons at Syrian facilities bombed by the United States.
Oh,
another one. And then I recall...
but that's all... That's,
the one
know,
radio
that's
network...
Russian news.
Microphones, and that was fake news.
Fake
and
news,
then, of course, we had this, so this is... This, of course, this never happened before. Oh, yes, it did one time. I mean,
those weapons of mass destruction got to be somewhere.
They got to be somewhere.
Nope, no weapons over there.
Let's just send some kids over there to get killed.
Maybe under here.
Maybe under there, George. Good.
Yeah,
do you believe
funny.
That?
No, I do believe it because when they get together, when they get together in a room by themselves, so to speak, I've found they speak the truth.
That makes my skin crawl.
And there he was making what everyone in that room obviously knew.
Knew.
Was, oh yeah, that was a bull. I was just going to say the word.
Yeah.
It was a reason, an inaccurate reason for going. But it was the reason that we gave to Americans. So, you know, there's the stated reason and then the real reason. And the stated reason was weapons of mass destruction. But everyone in that room, though, we went there for the oil.
Yeah. Oh, isn't that funny,
we went
George?
There for the oil.
Oh, that's funny, George.
You look there. Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
And now you're going to look over here. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, we're going to send 500,000 troops and they're going to look.
I wonder how the moms and dads of kids who died over there, how can
they weren't in the room. Patrick.
You think?
They were not in that room.
Hope they're not listening.
Those were high level donors. Do you have the conference that he was speaking to?
It was just a White House.
Was it the press corps dinner?
The press corps dinner, yeah. Very public. I mean, you know, a lot of people get in there.
No,
I can't believe he said that.
No, at a press corps dinner, see, they're supposed to make fun of themselves.
Yeah, so. Well, there's always truth.
Well,
through
we
all.
Call it kidding on the square. Yeah.
Kidding on the square?
Yeah. Mm. It's an old 30s term. We're kidding, but we're not really kidding. We're kidding on the square. Yeah, the weapons of mass distraction were certainly the reason given for us to, and, you know, how can you argue about that? Oh, they're gassing the children. My wife saw a commercial, one of those Help Us commercials. It was the little girl was inside, was playing in the yard, and a bomb went off outside her house. Help her. And Cindy's like, I can see why people get, I mean, that really got to me.
Sure, yeah.
And so I understand they tug at your heartstrings. Oh, the children are being gassed. We have to send in the troops. If they said, our pipeline is threatened, who would say send in the troops? Who would say
it? Who would say it?
Who would say it?
Who would say it?
The oil company executives might say it.
Or who would say, listen, we really got to grow some more poppies because this opioid thing is really getting out of hand.
Oh,
right? Cool. And so let's go to Afghanistan and make sure those poppies keep growing because...
Oh, it's the best poppy growing region in the
world.
Because
those Taliban keep burning the poppy fields. And, you know, that's really, you know, and, you know, this is
boy,
this is really getting...
That escalated quickly.
That's getting out of hand.
I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
It really did. You got to get them over there.
Well, you see, this is how the British got hung. Hong Kong in the first place.
Oh, really? Tell us about that.
Essentially, Karnak. the opium being sold to the Chinese people who decided they would rather smoke opium all day than to work. And
what a grand idea.
Then the Chinese people said, hey, stop selling this opium to our people.
Uh-huh.
And the British said, we'll do what we want. You stop.
So where did the British get all this opium? Afghanistan?
Mm.
Probably.
Wherever they had to get it.
And they flooded
China.
They brought it over there just to make these guys dope heads?
Yeah, well, sell opium. You know, that was
that's what I mean, dope heads, right?
They weren't going to sell it.
So that was like an old planned thing? That was just a big plan thing?
Yeah, it's good Google search for you. How the British got Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they just got the people stoned and then took them over?
No. They got them stoned, and then when the government objected, then they fought.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then when they fought and they lost against the British, then the Brits said, well, now we're taking Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. And that's how they got it.
I did opium once. I didn't inhale. But other than that.
You're talking like 1830s, the Opium Wars. You know, this was a long time.
So why did they call them the Opium Wars?
Because that's what
it was. They went to war over the whole thing?
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
And what was the Brits' reasoning to go into, like, India? I mean, and I'm sorry, South Africa. What were they doing down there?
What do you think?
Well,
I don't
know.
What is South Africa known for?
Gold,
diamonds, the beers. Yeah.
They just went down there and just took them over.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Not very sporty. That's not very neighborly.
Yeah, neighborly. That too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched a movie about that the other day, and they brought some viceroy, chancellor dude from England when they were going to finally get out. And they had to separate Pakistan and India.
Mm.
Remember that time?
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty interesting story.
They're
still fighting today. So, folks, if you don't know this, what they did was, Andy, you tell me if this is correct. So they brought this kind of team in from around the world, and they said, okay, you guys get in the room, and you got to draw a line, because the Pakistanis and the Indians couldn't get along because of religious things. Is that right? There are two different sects.
That's sex.
So they decided they could finally, when the British were getting out, justice. And they've been fighting ever since. Ever since.
Well, essentially, the British didn't care. There was like, hey, you draw the line. We don't care where it is. So they were willing to accommodate Pakistan. But it's when the Indians got involved in home rule. They were the ones.
Yeah. So now they both have nukes, right? Oh, that's great. Jeez.
Well, they've resisted.
So what's going on now? They're back at it with their in South Africa, wanting to take the land away from the white folks, right?
Oh, man.
That's going on now, right?
Ooh, that's going on.
That's
going
to get ugly, too, again.
That is already ugly.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's their land.
Yeah. Whose land?
Well, I don't know.
This land is my land.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah, I don't want to see how that ends.
No.
It could get ugly.
Not going to happen. Well, we have a lot to talk about here. We have some interesting emails for you. Patrick@oneradionetwork.com with Andrew Goss. He's a currency historian. He's a nationally recognized one at that. And as you can hear, we go all around the world here on The Real World of Money. And hope you're enjoying the show. Join us, Patrick, at oneradionetwork.com. More and more we know that at the end of the day, if you didn't have One Radio Network and other Mercola and these kinds of people, and the sun all just went away, all this information about your health, you'd probably know what to do. And I really mean that. You would just detoxify ongoing if you could, you know, with the things for the liver and the kidney and water and exercise and sweating and stuff like that, and eat the very best food you could, take care of your kids, and you'd probably be pretty good. Yep, even without the interweb. Sorry to say that. I don't make myself obsolete, but you'd be fine. And one of the ways that you can detoxify ongoing is with a sauna. And we've been using ours for about 10 years. See how detoxified I am? Can you see? Oh. And it really is really, really, really nice unit. It's very comfortable, very compact. There's no plumbing. You don't have to bang out any walls. Of course, if you do, Andrew will help you because he's good at that. But you just kind of plug it in, and you have two units at the bottom corners. You sit in a chair, put a towel over that, stick your head out there, very comfortable, and you just hang out for about 25, 30 minutes. And it's very, very hot. You will sweat, and it has the far infrared rays, and it really goes deep, deep in there. And we know, because of research, and this is true, that toxins, all the plastics and stuff like that, and the junk that we took in, and mercury and stuff like that, most of it stores in the fat. And if you don't have any fat like me, it's a problem. So that's why I don't know where it's going. So I have to keep toning. Anyway, you can do that, and it'll keep coming out, and you'll feel better and better, and not get toxified by whatever is going on in the global community with the global, the boys. So if you'd like to get one, just email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. On the internet, on our website, it says $11.95 delivered in contiguous United States, but it is $9.95 if you email me. You have a special deal. If you're hearing my voice, $9.95. Email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
Transforming your body to the shape and size you desire and feeling good at the same time just got a whole lot easier. The new frontier of human nutrition will be to focus upon the effects foods and herbs have upon the epigenetic portion of our DNA. Epigenetics teaches us that cells can be signaled to perform in a much younger manner. These signals can come from biochemicals in food or from frequencies generated from thoughts and feelings from yourself or others. One World Way uses high-quality milk derived from Amish pastured cows. It is processed to protect the proteins from damage and deliver the optimal epigenetic signals to all the cells of your body.
My name is Daniel. I'm 34 years old. When I started using One World Way, I weighed 228 pounds. Now, after 2.5 months, I weigh 182 pounds. This is my ideal weight. I've noticed an increase in stamina, rate of recovery from workouts, and an increase in my potency.
You can order One World Way here at OneRadioNetwork.com. That's OneRadioNetwork.com.
And we have chocolate. We have Neller. Neller, remember when you were kids? Chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, unsweetened, unflavored. Whey protein, and you have the 3-pounder, or 1-pounder and 3-pounders. I don't think they do the 5 anymore. The 1 and the 3-pounders keep the prices more down. And people love this product. It is raw, it is grass-fed, it's the real deal. And it goes on anytime you click on the One Radio Network ad for One World Way, right there.
SDL Incorporated is offering 3 free CDs to listeners of the One Radio Network on the definition of money, the history of the Federal Reserve, and protecting your wealth, which describes in brief how investors can utilize American gold and silver coins as a portion of your portfolio to provide some physical assets to compensate for the loss that most people now see in paper money, which is perpetually losing value. Please call us at 1-800-468-2646 for your free copies. Just mention that you heard it on the One Radio Network show. 1-800-468-2646.
That's a pretty cool deal, Andrew Goss. Why do you all do that? Why do you offer that free thing?
An educated consumer is our best customer.
Who said that?
Cy Sims.
An educated consumer is our best customer.
That's right.
Yeah, I guess so. People really get how this is all done.
Yeah, right? That's what we prefer, that they understand what they're doing before they just rush into some mad sales pitch. You know how that goes.
I've never heard those.
The world is on, the world's on fire. You're going to lose all your money. You should sell everything you own and buy gold now, and don't ask anything about it. Just buy it.
Yeah.
We don't operate that way. An educated consumer, one who understands why a portion of their wealth in gold and silver coins makes sense, those are the ones that are our best customers.
Because they kind of...
They get it.
They kind of get it, right? You don't have to kind of... It's kind of like somebody who gets natural stuff.
That's right.
You don't have to kind of convince them.
Then that, they just shop for GMO, non-GMO stuff, organic, things of that nature.
Are more people, do you think... do you see a broader spectrum of people who begin to get it over the years, or does it stay the same? Does that number stay the same?
It's increasing nicely, the number of people who get it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's really what the education is all about.
Sure.
We want to make sure you get it. Once you do, then you start to question the integrity of money in the bank.
Oh, my goodness. Don't go there.
Stock market.
You get in real trouble.
Yeah, well, just like when you question the efficacy or use of medicine, if we can broadly throw that term out there.
Yeah, yeah. Once you get that, then you just don't jump and go to the doctor as often, right?
Correct.
If you'd like to talk to Andrew about these kinds of things, it is 800-468-2646. You have people in Hawthorne and also Hilton Head. You have a staff.
Numismatists all.
Really?
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah, and they're not salespeople.
No.
They're salespeople second. they're numismatists first, which means naturally we have a smaller crew than some of the bigger retail houses who will just stick anybody in the customer service. If they have sales experience of any kind, you could sell, great. You get on the phone and you're talking to people. We have numismatists that share the love of numismatics.
And people have been with you a long time.
Well, it takes a long time to become a numismatist. And so once I develop one, I certainly don't want to lose them. And as a result, we do everything we can to keep them here.
Mm-hmm. My mom always encouraged me to marry a numismatist. So I
don't think
I don't know what she was thinking about. I don't know what she was thinking about.